Broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. The Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Previously recorded with Mark as the host of The Mark Kohler Show.
Enjoy this fresh take on strategies to better live the American dream.
Well, welcome everybody to today's show. My name is Mark Kohler. Excited to be here with you. Thank you so much for tuning in. For many of you that are already listening live, welcome. And for those of you listening from a recording or the podcast, welcome. Exciting show today. Really thrilled to be covering our open forum on self-directed IRAs beyond the basics. Cutting-edge strategies. We're going to break it down, bust it out. It's going to be awesome. And for those of you that are new listeners, thank you for tuning in. I'm sure it'll be worth your time. I promise you it'll be worth your time and an investment here. My name is Mark Kohler, your host, host of The Mark Kohler Show. Yes, I thought of that name of the show myself. Anyway, I'm a CPA, an attorney, a business owner, a real estate investor. I have an incredible team at my law firm, KKOS Lawyers, and accounting firm, K&E CPAs. I'm just the face behind an incredible team helping me as we serve clients around the country in their tax and legal strategies. We're helping people save money, make money, and protect it with quality asset protection. Avoid the scams and do it right. So welcome. I'm just, again, thrilled. Our main host, host and guest. He's going to co-host it with me. He has before. But our main topic today is that of self-directed IRA options, strategies. And we've got Matt Sorensen that will be joining us shortly with the release of his brand new book. So this is awesome. We've been talking about it on the show for over a year, about when this book was going to be finished. So we're going to have him on here shortly. I've got a number of emails that have already been sent in, so I'm going to be going through those and the order in which they received. Of course, live callers get priority. If you have a question for Matt Sorensen here later on, please give us a call at 646-200-4285. And we have our live chat for those that are watching or listening from your computer. You can listen from your computer, and the chat line is open. I just typed in a little, hey, everybody, welcome. And we've got Lisa in the studio. She'll pick up your call. If you are going to call in, turn off the volume on your computer and just listen in through your phone. There is a delay of a few seconds. But this is live and unregulated. So I guess we could say whatever we wanted, but we don't want to do that. Let's keep it PG. So it's going to be good. But there's no sensor that someone's got time delay ability to bleep anything out. So if you want to swear about your IRA, this is your chance, I guess. Now, as many of you know, every week on our show, I want to hit a few important announcements and topics, deadlines. We're going to go over a quick tax tip and a legal tip, and then jump into our topic of the hour. So first, on some of the announcements, if you haven't already subscribed to our weekly newsletter and blog posts, please do so. You can get to it by any one of our four main websites, markjkohler.com, self-directed or SDIRAhandbook.com, or mattsorensen.com, also knecpas.com and kkoslawyers.com. So that's the law firm, accounting firm, then Matt Sorensen, mine's personal websites, where we try to spread a lot of educational material. On any of those sites, you can sign up for our newsletter. I think there's a link at the end of my email signature as well where you can get to that sign up. But please check it out. Every week we send out a newsletter, and today some of the important deadlines are, oh boy, it's just gearing up, right? It's tax season time. So I'll just hit a couple highlights. Tomorrow, the 15th, is your deadline for payroll deposits and quarterly deposits for fourth quarter. Now, if you miss some of those deadlines, it's not the end of the world, and the IRS isn't going to blow through your doors or windows with AK-47s, but you could get a nasty letter with some additional penalties. So be aware of that. They're not very exorbitant penalties, but they are penalties. And some of you, I know that drives you crazy. Others of you say that penalty is cheaper than credit card interest. I'd rather pay the penalty. I'll wait to make my deposit later. But just keep it in mind, that deadline is tomorrow. Also, I wrote an article in the blog today, and actually it went out a couple days ago, but it was promulgated, of course, in the newsletter that went out last night, and that is the 1099 topic for any of you that are business owners, and you have paid more than $600 to a service provider, product provider, someone in your business throughout the year. You need to at least review the rules to determine if you need to issue them a 1099, and those need to go out by the end of the month. And we've got Cynthia Morales in our office working quickly through payroll and 1099. She's got a couple of assistants helping her because she's so busy. But the cost is very affordable. Maybe that's the problem. We should increase our prices and she wouldn't be as busy. But that's okay. We think it's a very nominal price and service. It just needs to get done, and the penalties are getting atrocious. So make sure you read that article. You can get to it from my blog at markjkohler.com or through the newsletter. It's on the 1099 rules and whether or not you need to send out a 1099. And please, I will ask you now, don't call Cynthia on January 30th and go, Cynthia, can you do my 1099s? At least forewarn her now. You may not have all your data ready, but at least call her and tell her it's coming. So that way you're on her radar screen. That would be great. But again, if you want to do your 1099s yourself, you have to pick up forms in triplicate. You cannot download forms from the web. So this is something you don't want to try to pull off on the last day of the month at 10 o'clock at night. You're not going to be able to do it on the web. You've got to think a little more in advance. Some great articles there. Also on real estate investment in 2014. I talked about being a real estate professional, and Matt Sorensen's article, releasing his book. He's given us a special promo code in our newsletter today and on the radio show where you can get $5 off on the purchase of that book. And he'll talk more about that, I'm sure. But you'll see his article talking about the book release. Really exciting. And in my personal message, I take some jabs at him and joke around about all of the complaining he's given us this as a team this last year of how many sleepless nights he's had writing this book. And I just teasing him. He's awesome. This book is so good, folks. You're going to love it. And we're just glad he can get some sleep now. So he's worked so hard to get that book out there, and I think many are going to love it, The Self-Directed IRA Handbook. So we're going to just go over to our tipsters now. I'm actually broadcasting live out of Cedar City, Utah this week. It's tax season. Once a month I come back to work with the tax and legal team at our headquarters in the beautiful Red Rock Canyons of Cedar City, Utah. It's a little chilly, but so beautiful. I love being here, and I just stepped out of a meeting an hour ago with one of our key managers and CPAs, Brian Brown, and I understand he is joining us for a tip here on the radio show. So it's always a pleasure to have him. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Mark. It's not chilly here, though. You should know that. It's 45 degrees and sunny. It's a beautiful, warm day.
Yes, I'd almost use the word balmy. That's balmy.
Exactly. You know, I was in Southern California over Christmas for a couple of days, and it was in the 80s there, and I was cooking. It was way too hot for me. So, no, I'm glad to be in this beautiful, perfect weather.
It is nice. It is crisp. I know I'm going to move from balmy to crisp, but it's fun being here. So Brian, what do you got for us this week? What little unique little tax issue did you come upon this last while?
Well, it's unique. I guess isn't a term for it. I want to go along with your IRA retirement plan self-directed issues. And the thing we're here at the last year. Again, you talked about payroll tax deposits being due tomorrow. If you don't, and a lot of people say, yeah, how do I get enough money into my IRA or into my retirement plan to self-direct it? And, you know, you can put $5,500 in for 2013. That's due April 15th, of course, of 2014. But, you know, if we don't have a 401k set up, or we can put money into our 401ks, but if it's not set up, am I locked into this $5,500, or how do I get more into it? One way is, if you've got your own business, if your payroll is high enough, is to have a SEP, self-employed plan. And again, we can put up to 25% of our wage into there as a company contribution or as a company deduction. So again, we're putting money away, taking the deduction for it, and getting it in for our, you know, our retirement so we can self-direct. You know, when we're self-directing, we want to get that money in there. We want to be able to use it to self-direct. But
yeah,
if we only have a few thousand dollars here or there, it makes it more difficult.
Yeah, I think this is a great point that a lot of people are excited about self-directing and they forget about the contributions and how we got to get the money in there first from a rollover or some form or fashion. So I think this is a good point. And I apologize setting the stage for a unique point, but I think this is unique because here's the point I would add to it, Brian, is this is the perfect time of year to talk about the SEP, the self-employed pension. We as a firm are generally not a fan of the SEP when you have time to properly plan with possibly a solo 401k. They're cheap to set up, and you can put away a lot more money efficiently. But this time of year, and Brian, I think it's so good you brought it up, because if you miss the deadline in December to get your 401k set up, you have now until the filing of your return to consider the SEP. And if you had a sole proprietorship and you're just getting familiar with our firm and strategies, you may have not already been in the S-Corp mode, and a SEP could be one of your best strategies this time of year.
Yeah, and so that it's just another option. But again, we're looking to put more money in so that we can self-direct. You know, I mean,
yeah.
Like I say, if you're limited to, you know, it's been $5,000 in the past for an IRA, and of course, if you're over 50, you get that extra $1,000, like me. But again, in 2013, it's up to $5,500. But, you know, if I've got a W-2 that's, you know, $100,000 out of my business because my S-Corp's been doing really well and I haven't got a 401k set up, I can contribute $25,000 into my SEP. You know, so again, I'm just getting more into it. It's that, or again, if I've got my sole proprietor, my Schedule C, again, we've got, you know, a lot more that we can put into a SEP than we can to an IRA.
Yeah, it's a great, great point. And so I want to just summarize this with another way of saying it. If you're a small business owner and you ended up with a bigger year last year than you expected, and again, some of those plans for a retirement contribution didn't come to fruition, and now you're kind of behind the eight ball, the SEP is the let me fix it. I screwed up and didn't do a 401k plan. That's what I typically call this.
Exactly, it's because we can get you can get the IRA set or the 401k set up in 2014, and then you can actually roll that money from your SEP into that 401k. And again, we've got more money, more things to do to self-direct that IRA.
That's right. And folks, the point being, of course, and Matt talks about this in his book, we'll be talking about that more in depth, is that any of these plans can be self-directed. It's just getting that money in there in the most tax-efficient way. So great comment, Brian. Thank you so much. And I know that, folks, if you're looking for that planning meeting on what to potentially write off and how much should I contribute, Brian would be a great one to consult with here. He's on the phone with clients around the country. Brian, please, why don't you give out your phone number, Brian, just in case someone wanted to give you a call.
And phone number is 435-865-5866.
Perfect, 435-865-5866. Brian Brown offering color commentary for the SUU Thunderbird football team and a CPA and manager here at the firm.
Exactly.
Go How'd you like that? That little introduction.
I should have started
it with that.
Great. Yeah.
Well, we love you, Brian. Brian, thank you so much. You enjoy the crisp weather.
I shall.
Okay, thanks. All right. Well, before we go to a quick legal tip, we did have a caller and talking about the 1099. I was going to, of course, wait on callers for the IRA topic, but if I wait too long, I think it might ruin the flow once I introduce Matt and we get into IRA. So I'm going to bring him out right now. Al, welcome to the show. I guess you had a comment about the 1099 process.
Hey, Mark. One of the things I've done in the past and realized is the forms that you have to get from the federal government's a three-part carbon copy kind of thing. they actually do run through a laser printer if you don't have any other impact printer to run them, tear them apart and print them separately. But even more significantly, if you haven't ordered your forms, you can actually pull the paper copy ones down to send out as notifications, but you can't send those to the federal government. So you could send the, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you can send a paper copy out on unofficial document to your 1099 recipients as long as you send the red copy to the feds later.
Yes, I think this is a great point. And Al, I'm glad you bring this up because for all of our listeners, it's important to note that the IRS, unless you're, the IRS is very patient and understanding as long as you're showing good faith to try to get this information out to people. The penalties are very onerous and high, but they're really, they use the word flagrant or disregard. So when business owners just say, screw it, I'm not going to do a 1099, they're the ones that are getting hammered. But I think it's a great point, Al, that folks, if you're up against the wall and you need to just send out some sort of notice on your 1099s and it's not the official paperwork, you can still, I think that's a great point, follow it up with the official 1099 in triplicate, get with the your preparer or do it on your own. But I like that, Al. That's a great idea.
And I mean, Mark, correct me if I'm wrong, but the triplicate copies don't actually go out to everybody. They only go out to the one copy goes to the federal government as notification with the 1096, and then just a paper copy notification goes to the individuals that receive it. Am I missing something?
No, you're right. The triplicate is there. So the IRS implemented this triplicate form as a check and balance that, you know, everybody was getting the same numbers, the government,
right,
Social Security, and the client themselves or the vendor. So you're right. Once this triplicate form is printed out, you rip off a piece, it goes to the vendor, you know, and the rest goes in a stack with the 1099, 1096. And the IRS just wants that pre-printed triplicate perforation to show that, yeah, this is the real official form. You're right. They're not sent out in a bundle to anyone. They are actually torn apart. So, good point.
And though even though it's light paper, it actually will print on a laser printer in most cases. So you can tear them apart and print them individually too, which is what I've done for years. So,
yeah, great point. You know, and I think, Al, this is a good thing that your comments, in my opinion, have eased maybe some of the stress of those listeners out there going, oh, do I really have to do this, and is it that bad? It's very affordable. I think I said in the newsletter we charge like $30 for the 1096 and $2 for each 1099. They can be very simple. But I will say this, and Al, I'm sorry keeping you on here for one more moment. I think the big thing is that people have got to have the W-9s filled out. I emphasize this in my blog article, is that if you're not getting W-9s from your vendors throughout the year, it does make your 1099 process more difficult because you don't have people's EINs and addresses, and you're in your, you know, the 11th hour and end of January, and you're really screwed up because you didn't get those W-9s. So I want to take a minute to mention that. I guess, Al, I'm sure you use the W-9 regularly.
Oh, W-9s, I've had a couple situations where somehow they got missed, and I no longer use that sub. And I'll tell you what, it's pretty tough going back to that sub and saying, oh, by the way, I want your Social Security number so I can send you a 1099, and they're like, screw you.
yeah, it's bad. And the nice thing, I'll just say in summary, is that you can print out a W-9 from IRS.gov or just Google it, and you can have one in 2 seconds. So the W-9 is very easy to produce and get out there to your vendors, folks. Just make it one of your New Year's resolutions. So, Al, thanks for the call.
Yep. Thanks, Mark.
Great comment. I love it. All right, well, I'm going to move to a quick legal tip here, and I sure appreciate callers like that offer a little bit of additional guidance and support for all of our listeners out there. So here's a quick legal tip. I was actually interviewed by the Associated Press yesterday on this issue, and I was actually pretty surprised. They were asking about it, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to bring this up on the radio show. They were doing a big article in the Los Angeles Times on those that are buying homes together that aren't married. So sometimes, of course, people are choosing to live together longer and before the marriage vows take place. And so considering buying homes, and what are the legal issues? And so I was able to talk for quite at length about some of the concerns I have. And really that there's a lot of positives to buying a home with someone. I think that's a great idea. And if done right, the tax benefits can be shared. But here's the point I wanted to make as a legal tip. If you're out there in a serious relationship with someone and you're just not ready to get married quite yet, but you may live together, you may buy a home together, you may do business together, you're going to start commingling assets maybe, I want to just recommend two things. Number one, at least do a written agreement as to what the understanding is between the both of you when you buy this property. You may go on title as tenants in common. You might go on title as tenants with rights of survivorship, joint tenancy with rights of survivorship, or you might even hold the property in a trust or hold it in an LLC. Those are great topics for a quick 30-minute consult with one of our lawyers to say, how should we structure this so that we're protected? Because I know it's not comfortable to talk about, but you may break up, right? You may fall out of love, and all of a sudden you've got this piece of real estate that you're both on title for, and one of you may have put more money in than the other. One of you may have made the mortgage payments more so than the other. One of you may be signed on the dotted line for the loan, and the other's not. These are all important considerations, and here was what I said on this in this interview yesterday was, there is no divorce court, divorce structure, divorce attorney process for you when you're not married. You're going to just have a basic partnership dispute, and it's going to take longer, and it's going to be a bigger headache. And it's really sad when you have this relationship fall apart, and you've got this property. And I can just tell you story after story of clients that have been in a relationship where they bought a property together, and now they split up, and the fight starts, and it's ugly. So number one, at least do a kind of a written little agreement that says, hey, if we ever split up, we're going to get our own money out. We're going to sell the property. The other one has the first right to buy it. Well, how much value? I don't know. Go through it. It's a very easy agreement. Well, any of our attorneys at our office could help you put together something. The second point I want to make is two words, prenup. I know it's very uncomfortable if you're in love with someone to bring up the word prenuptial agreement and say, not stay together forever. Why don't we write something down here about our assets that we're starting to commingle? That's very, very uncomfortable. If I can make any recommendation at all, is that when some of you out there that are single, that are out there dating, bring up the prenup topic right away in a relationship. So on your first or second date, say, I've got this terrible attorney. He's named Mark Kohler. He won't let me do anything unless I have a prenup with any new relationship. I'm building real estate up. I'm building up a business. I'm always going to have a prenup. And get it out there. It's a lot more uncomfortable to bring it into the picture months or many, many dates later and the relationship's blossomed. It could be a very, very hard and uncomfortable situation. So anyway, little legal tip there. If you're buying real estate together with someone that you're not married with, but that you have that bond, that physical relationship, that living arrangement, you really, really need to do some legal documentation or it can backfire. Okay, well, with that said, we've covered a little tax tip, a little legal tip. I am so excited to bring out the man of the hour, the myth, the legend, the author of the new book, the Self-Directed IRA Handbook, the one and only Matt Sorensen.
Visualize some of the high fives going on right now. Just visualize it.
See, I should have done something. Okay, I should do this right here. I should bring this out. We should have really done that better. Okay, I'm going to try it again. Now, for those that haven't listened to this show before, we really try to have fun here. Okay, here we go. This is it for Matt Sorensen. Here it comes. There we go. Coming on stage, the one and only Matt Sorensen, author of the book, the Self-Directed IRA Handbook. Matt Sorensen, take it away, Matt. Did you know I programmed it? I programmed it in Blog Talk just for you, and I forgot to hit it right when I was starting my
interview. I love it. Well, you know what? It's a lot better than me coming on the show and you saying, hey, is your book done yet?
True. I'll give you that. True. Touche. Oh, man. Well, Matt, did you get some sleep last night? Are you just excited?
Oh, I'm excited, but you know what I'm doing now? I'm recording the audiobook. So I'm like,
it never
at
ends.
Nights, I'm like, I'm recording my book, trying to sound exciting and interesting. But, no, I'm so excited to have the book out. And, you know, I really, you know, the book, I was just telling a client this morning, you know, I mean, clients pay, you know, $300 an hour to talk to me. And it's like, it's basically 5 minutes of my time from what I bill at $300 an hour. And just go buy the book. And you'll learn a lot more than just your specific question you have, because a lot of the answers are in there. So I'm not trying to put myself out of business, but it's there's so much that I cover in the book. It really is very comprehensive for a self-directed IRA investor, and I'm just excited to have it out there and see what people think and hopefully help some people make some profitable, good decisions with their self-directed IRAs and avoid some of the pitfalls and mistakes that sometimes can be made too.
Yeah, I love it. And Matt, for those that don't know what the book's about, this has been something you've been consulting clients with for years. It's been a passion of yours. Just tell us in summary, what's this handbook all about?
Well, the basic concept of a self-directed IRA is that you can use your retirement plan to buy any investment allowed by law. A lot of people use their retirement accounts to buy real estate or invest in private companies or buy precious metals or set up IRA LLCs. And there's a whole different investment option you have when you take your IRA off of like Fidelity or Merrill Lynch or some of the broker-dealers that sell stocks and bonds. There's lots of self-directed IRA custodians who will let you buy whatever investments are allowed by law. And so, but it's been something that, you know, there's been some people that have written about it, and there's been some good books about it, but they're very basic. They really are, hey, you can do this type books. And no one's really taken the time and published a book that goes through why you can do it, that cites the cases, that cites the IRS's position, that cites the Department of Labor's position, that goes through the code meticulously. I mean, I really spent a lot of time doing significant research for the book to make sure everything I said I was backing up. And I think that's something that is people get out there and self-direct, you know, their financial advisor might tell them, oh, you know, you shouldn't do that. Or, you know, they've never even heard of it. So they're a little bit concerned about how is this legitimate? Can I do this? And what are the rules? Well, that's why I wrote the book. And it really came from talking with clients over the years who asked me all the questions. And I tried to get all the most common questions that we get asked into the book. Every chapter has a section of frequently asked questions with numerous questions. I've got tables, charts, diagrams. You know, the book's full of information on the subject. So I'm just really excited to have it out there. And I think that if someone's making self-directed IRA investments, this is a book you've got to read. It's serious. I mean, $20. Or you can get a $9.99 on ebook. It's really going to be worth your investment. You'll learn a lot, I guarantee you will.
I love it. Well, and folks, of course, we're going to share here a way in a moment where you can get a discount code, and it's already in the newsletter. So if you have the newsletter, the discount code is on the right-hand side of the home page, and you'll be able to have a $5 discount and get that book for a lot less, and I think you'll love it. So we'll expect to have that Matt share that shortly. Now, Matt, we also have a bunch of questions. This is an open forum show, and beyond the basics, we want to hold true to our advertisement that we are going to go beyond the basics. Matt and I talked about how there are so many people that get into this topic but only just touch the fringes of it. Well, we've got our expert Matt Sorensen here, so we're gonna jump into some of these questions and just see how it goes, and I think it'll open the door to a lot of the topics. Matt, how's that sound to you?
That sounds so good to me, and I'm glad to be doing it with you. You know, I just gonna say this. I wanted to say thanks to you, Mark, too. Yeah, you're in my book. I put you in my book, acknowledged you for a paragraph, because you taught me about self-directed IRAs back in 2006. You're the first person I ever heard it from. So, you know, I just wanted to say thanks and love you, man.
Oh, man. Jeez, this is like a Dr. Phil show. We're going to have some a little more touchy-feely moment here. This is great. Well, thank you, Matt. You're so awesome. I don't even have my buy printed copy, folks, you may be able to buy a book and get it faster than me. I ordered my books, a whole case of them, and I think they're going to be sitting in my office tomorrow. So I'm excited to see them. I'll look at that. Okay, well, we've got to, I'm going to jump into these questions. Thank you, Matt. We're so excited for you. This is what a wonderful life accomplishment, and to show your children what you've accomplished here. This is from Jim. He says, can you please explain the differences between, difference, advantages, disadvantages, or strategies between a self-directed 401k and what I recently heard about referred to as a solo 401k? So, Jim, that great question, and kind of a softball too, Matt. What are the differences between a self-directed 401k and a solo 401k?
Okay, great, great question. I touch on these on the book. There's two parts to that, and this is somewhat of a complicated answer, but it's really important. The first is just who can have a self-directed IRA versus who can have a self-directed 401k. And then there's a question of what is different in how I invest them. How are they treated differently in doing self-directed IRA investing? So on the first part of that question is who can have a self-directed IRA versus a self-directed 401k? Now, pretty much anyone can have a self-directed IRA. You know, you can roll over existing monies from an old employer's account. You can make new contributions into an IRA. Any individual can have an IRA. Now, there's certain rules for Roth on how much you can put in, and there's some rules about that. The self-directed 401k though is a little more restrictive because you have to be self-employed to set up a self-directed 401k, or you have to work for an employer that allows you to self-direct. Not many employers do. KKOS Lawyers does in our 401k, but you know that's very rare. but you could, if you're self-employed, set up your own 401k because 401ks are employer-based plans. So as the employer for yourself, you're going to adopt a 401k and you're going to create a plan such that you can invest in whatever investments are allowed by law. You're not going to restrict yourself to stocks, bonds, and mutual funds like most large company 401k plans do. So that's the first part of it, who can do it. If you do have some self-employment, you may want to consider the self-directed 401k for some of the reasons that Brian and Mark talked about in the tax tip of you can put more money away into a 401k per year than you can an IRA. But there are additionally some investment benefits. And Mark, I know, you know, we talk a lot about some of these differences, but there's really two. I hear some people talk about three, but there's really two in my mind. The first The first is that there the way privileged transactions are treated. There's something called a privileged transaction that happens when your IRA engages in a transaction with a disqualified person, which can be yourself or your spouse or kids. But the consequence of a privileged transaction in a 401k is different than in an IRA. What happens in a 401k is that you get a penalty, and you have to pay some penalties, but the 401k stays intact. In an IRA, typically your IRA becomes entirely disqualified, but there's no penalty necessarily, except just that it's distributed and no longer an IRA. The second difference, and probably the most important, particularly for real estate investors who use self-directed retirement plans, is there's a tax called UDFI tax. Now, again, we're going beyond the basics. There's a tax called UDFI tax that applies when your IRA uses debt to increase its purchasing power. And if you use debt to buy an asset, let's say you buy 100,000 property, 50,000 from your IRA, 50,000 from a loan, the IRS looks at that and says, you know what, we're going to give you tax-deferred or tax-free treatment for half of the investment because half of it was from your IRA's money. But the other half was debt and didn't really have to do with your IRA. We're going to tax that part. And so half your profits in that example get taxed in an IRA. In a self-directed 401k, there's no UDFI tax. And so that tax on debt doesn't happen when you leverage 401k investments. It's a little perk you get in the 401k structure that's tax code.
All right. Well, gosh. Now, when we said beyond the basics, Matt wasn't lying. So I know some of you probably glossed over. This was an easy. I'm going to give you the easy answer here too. I think it was a little easy too. But let me another way to answer it. But hang in there, folks. For some of you that are new to this IRA 401k stuff, we're going to be hitting some of the basics today too. But that was deep. That was good. So here's Jim. Let me take another angle at your. You said what's the difference between a self-directed 401k and a solo 401k? There's no difference. A solo 401k can be self-directed, or a solo 401k can be invested in Wall Street funds. So a solo 401k just means that you're a corporation with maybe you and or your spouse as employees. It's very simple. It's easy. You can self-direct it if you want, or just buy regular stock. So that would be another way that I was thinking about of that question too. So Jim, you may have been wanted that more of that detail that Matt provided, or maybe one paragraph answer might help too. I'm not sure. So Jim, thank you for the question. Good stuff. Okay, well, I'm going to move on here to our next question. This is from Peggy. She says, I do my best to keep all my books and records complete and clear for my IRA LLC in case of an audit. How often does that happen and might trigger it? And what might trigger it? So what are the cases of an audit, Matt? Are they're fairly rare with an IRA LLC.
Yeah, they're very rare. You know, usually what will trigger an audit is if your LLC files a tax return, which if you have a multi-member or partnership IRA LLC, you know, you could just fall into a general audit because that LLC's tax return gets audited. But for your your so-called checkbook control or your IRA LLC that's 100% owned by an IRA and it's a single-member LLC, there's no tax return filed. So so that's not, you know, going to pull up and trigger an audit. What you usually see from the cases where we have IRA LLCs in cases is it's usually actually coming from a tax return in their multi-member structures. You do see some just from like a, you know, there's maybe a real estate transaction, or the last one I wrote about on my blog article, like there's a real estate transaction, and for example, there's some the proceeds, the 1099 for proceeds of the sale get reported, and it's somehow irregular. But the last one there was a case on, the last case I did was the custodian triggered the privy transaction case because they were aware of privy transactions occurring. So there's some places it can occur, but it is very rare. You're much more likely to be audited personally. But, you know, you still got to stay in compliance with the rules in the event your number does come up, because they do come up. You know, there are cases where self-directed IRAs do get audited. I've handled some for clients, you know, and there are certainly lots coming through tax court.
Yeah, let me make a comment too, Peggy, is that, and Peggy's an attorney as well. I should highlight that. So, Matt, we've got to be on our toes here. But, Peggy, one thing here is, like Matt said, a single-member IRA LLC is not even going to be filing a tax return. So it's going to be far less under the radar. Number two, even a regular 1065 LLC, just because the IRAs are owners, doesn't mean it's going to get looked at any differently by the IRS. So again, the chance of an audit is rare. I think what Matt said makes a great point, that if you can keep your custodian happy, making sure you're not getting a 1099 issued, or you're doing your valuations with the custodian properly, that's really the low-hanging fruit, and where an audit would most likely come from is because you ticked off your custodian and they've alerted the IRS to you doing something wrong. Number two question, this is a good one, Peggy asked Matt. Is it required, advisable, or necessary to have a separate manager of my IRA LLC? Can I be my own manager of my IRA LLC, or do I even have my custodian serve? What are your thoughts?
Okay, you can be your own manager of your IRA LLC. That's usually one of the benefits of that structure. Your custodian will never be the manager of your IRA LLC. That kind of defeats the purpose of the IRA LLC, and they don't agree to that. They don't want to serve in that capacity. You can have someone else, you know, if you had a financial professional or CPA or attorney or I don't know, somebody that handled your investments, they could serve as manager. But the important part is on this manager concept is not whether you're serving as manager, but what you're doing as manager. and what your documents indicate. The last case on IRLCs that came out was in October. It's called Ellis versus Commissioner. It's on my blog. It's in my book. So, you know, the book's very current. But the last case on IRLCs was this Ellis case. And the IRA owner was the manager of the IRLC. In the tax court and in the position of the IRS, that wasn't challenged. The tax court did not have issue with the IRA owner being manager of the IRLC. What happened, though, is the documents in the LLC allowed the LLC to pay the IRA owner compensation, and the LLC, in fact, paid the IRA owner compensation for serving as manager. That's what caused the privity transaction in that case. So it was a good case because it frankly modeled the opinion Mark and I have been giving clients for years, which is you can be manager of the IRLC subject to certain restrictions, which you want to put in the documents and you obviously need to follow. And those restrictions are, you know, you're not receiving any compensation for serving as manager, limiting your tasks serving as manager of the IRLC to administrative tasks or investment oversight tasks, such as signing checks, receiving income, paying bills, signing contracts, that type, you know, administering the investment. It's not like, you know, you're going to go physically remodel kitchens on a property your IRLC owns. That could go too far. But those are the rules. And if it's for since Peggy's an attorney, you may be interested in reading the Ellis case, and you can find the link on my blog. It's also, as I mentioned, in my book.
Excellent, excellent. Third question. She says, if yes, I can be a manager, does that manager have to sign all documents and or checks, or as a member manager, can I sign when he or she is not available? I'll just say this quickly, Peggy. You're never going to be a member manager because you're not a member. The IRA is the member. You're just the manager. So be careful. Just a thought is keep in mind the members and managers are going to be different, and your IRA is the member. You could serve as manager. If you have whoever's serving as the manager, they're going to be the one signing everything. I don't care if it's you or someone else. And just simply signing documents and checks, as Matt just said, is not a prohibited transaction. So don't worry about that. Folks, if you've just joined us too, I'm excited to be talking with Matt Sorensen, partner at KKOS Lawyers and the author of the new book, Self-Directed IRA Handbook. If you have a question, please email Matt at kkoslawyers.com or Mark, M-A-R-K, at kkoslawyers.com, or you could come on live. Just press the number 1 if you're listening on your phone already, or if you want to call in, the number is 646-200-4285. Now, and I'm sorry for a little bit of feedback. I saw that on the chat line. I'm in the quietest place I could find, and still my phone is being a little scratchy here. Again, I had to call in live from Cedar City. Next show question. We've got Tyson here. Says, Matt, how do you take a RMD from a self-directed account if all that is in the IRA is real estate? Now, that's interesting, Ooh. Tyson. That's a great question. I wonder if, Tyson, you have an IRA LLC. I think that's almost a second option. Matt, why don't you field it first, and we can talk about the IRA LLC as being probably a better way to handle that.
Okay.
How do you take an RMD? What's an RMD? What's a required minimum distribution? Do you want to field that first?
Yeah. So good question. Again, we're getting beyond the basics, which I love. but RMD, required minimum distribution, is a rule that you have to, when you reach 70.5, you must start taking money from your IRA. So, for example, if you have a traditional self-directed IRA and it owns a, let's say it owns a rental property, and but there's no cash in the IRA. There's just, you know, maybe some rental checks come in here and there, but there's no cash in it, and you need to take a required minimum distribution. At 70.5, you know, you may have to take, let's say you have $100,000 value in the IRA, and you're at 70.5, you may have to take out 5% or so of the total value of that account per year, because the IRS wants to force you to start taking the money out of the retirement account to live off of and to pay them taxes on. So that's called an RMD, required minimum distribution. So for $100,000, maybe you got to take out $5,000 a year at that age. Now, this becomes a problem for certain people who have illiquid assets in a self-directed IRA. I think that's what the question is getting at. And Mark, you and I have, you know, we've had to talk through some of these situations. But essentially what you can do is what's called an in-kind distribution. And where rather than taking $5,000 of cash from my IRA to myself personally as a distribution to cover my required minimum distribution for the year, I can take a portion of the ownership of that asset in kind. So if it's an IRA LLC, we'd take maybe 5% of the ownership of that LLC, distribute it to you personally, and you'd own that now in kind. Now your LLC is owned 5% by you personally, 95% by your IRA. Or if your IRA owned the property directly, what we would do is you'd take a 5% tenant in common interest personally, 95% owned by your IRA. And since this is a distribution, it's not subject to privity transaction rules, so you could transfer, you know, it to yourself personally. But it does need to get reported, you know, to the IRS. Your custodian needs to know that information to make sure you're complying with your required minimum distribution rules. And, you know, this is just to be totally nerdy about the thing. You know, for year 2014, 1099s now, which show your, the amount of distributions you've taken for a 1099-R, that's the form you get that says how much distributions you've taken from your retirement account, those now have a box for in-kind distributions. So, you know, I know it's pretty exciting. I know you're excited about it. But that's, you know.
I'll give you a woo.
But that's how it works. It is tricky. You know, you want to try and avoid having illiquid assets in your self-directed IRA once you're reaching 70.5 and you have to start taking money out. You know, hopefully you have maybe some rental income coming in or some other cash in retirement accounts that you could use to take a distribution, because it can be a headache to have to take an asset distribution in kind, though it is possible.
Well, excellent. Yeah, you covered everything I would want to say, and I will just add, ironically, I've got one of these sitting on my desk, wide open, is this LLC document with the operating agreement, and I need to do an in-kind distribution for a client for last year, and it's literally on my desk right now. So this is very common, and just issuing some of the LLC interest. And if you say, well, Mark, I don't have an LLC in my IRA, I just have real estate in my IRA, create an LLC. Your IRA can always add an LLC later. Put the real estate in the LLC, get a quick down and dirty valuation, maybe $500 appraisal, and then say, oh, here's my LLC interest value per share, and then distribute in-kind LLC interest. And you get the asset protection of having the LLC now, instead of having a tenant in common situation too. And Peggy, this goes back to your question a minute ago. This is totally fine, you being a manager and an owner of the LLC with your IRA. So now you become a member and a manager at that point. So it can get a little more complex. Okay, we've got a question from Judy. She says, I have a self-directed Roth IRA now with APS, American Pension Services. We love them. And earning next to no interest with the money just sitting there. Can I do anything with that money? Also, my business partner, I own a home that is paid in full with the Roth and have $10,000 just sitting in the LLC checking account. Can that money go back into our Roth for investing as well? So, Matt, it sounds like I'm going to repeat this in another way and throw it at you. Oh, Judy has an IRA at her custodian. It's a Roth IRA. It has some money sitting in it at the custodian. She also has a Roth IRA LLC with some money sitting in that account. And frankly, she's wondering, can I take the $10,000 out of my IRA LLC and put it back in the Roth? And I would also add, can I take the Roth money and put it in the LLC? Matt, you might be able to go both directions on this one, right?
Yeah, sure. If it's, you know, if they're both Roth accounts, if the IRA LLC is a Roth IRA LLC and you have just the Roth IRA, I mean, in that scenario, if it's 100% Roth IRA owns that IRA LLC, it's easy. You put more money in from that Roth IRA into the IRA LLC, or you can send money back from that IRA LLC over to the Roth IRA. Usually, it's most efficient if you're going to self-direct, for example, your Roth IRA, to just have one Roth IRA. You know, you might have a Roth IRA that you do stocks, bonds, and mutual funds with, and a Roth IRA you do self-directing with, but you usually aren't going to have multiple Roth IRAs you're doing self-directing with, except in some limited situations. So that usually is going to be the same account that will own the Roth IRA-owned LLC, and you can invest more money from that Roth IRA into the IRA LLC, or you can send money back from that IRA LLC back to the Roth IRA if you're done for whatever the LLC was being used for. Testing, Mark, I'm here.
Oh, sorry. Okay, Matt, I'm here. I am so sorry. Okay, I was trying to keep cut down on the sound, and so I'm not sure where we got cut off there. So, everybody, I apologize for that little technical difficulty. We're still here live broadcasting. Let me just say that was a great comment about using Roth money, and I would just add to it, too, about you could take the Roth money, put it in the Roth LLC, and have the LLC it'll open up its own little investment account. Do some hard money lending. Maybe you don't have enough money to buy another rental property. But if you've got IRA money sitting at your custodian, put it in the LLC and stockpile your money and try to do something with it. Buy some gold or silver or something, but get using the money. Which leads us right into a great question, Matt. This is a question from Benjamin. He says, I am just starting out and have around $10,000 in a Roth IRA. Would a self-directed IRA LLC be beneficial from a cost standpoint? Or do you have a minimum you recommend to clients about using a self-directed IRA LLC?
Good question. You know, I think one of the things you have to think about when you think of a retirement account, you know, a self-directed retirement account or an IRA LLC is that, you know, the retirement account is a tool. It's not the investment. It's not, you know, it's a tool to invest. And so if $10,000 is enough to, you know, put in this toolkit, so to speak, to complete the investments you would make, then it's enough. But it just depends on what you're investing in. So if you have a plan to buy a property, for example, and you're in California, well, $10,000 is not going to cut it. You know, you're not going to get very far. If your plan is hey, I want to use my self-directed IRA to invest in someone else's business, or maybe to loan some of that money out to someone else, or partner with someone else, then that $10,000 could be put to use. But it really just depends on what the end investment goals are, you know, to determine whether to do a self-directed IRA or to do an IRA LLC. But like I said, the options are really endless. It could be lending, partnering with others, buying something outright yourself. There's really lots of options.
All right. And Matt, I know that you've probably got some emails there to you, so I should give you a moment.
I do.
I've got one here from Larissa, but we'll hold off for a moment here, Matt. Go ahead. What questions do you have there?
Well, I got a good one here. This is a common question. This is from Craig. He says, your local client, Mark and Matt, your legal and accounting team always do a great job for us. I just wanted to get that little endorsement in there.
Thank you.
Pardon the commercial interruption, everyone. But but Craig says, if I have cash in my IRA LLC, and can that cash be invested in the market with a financial advisor rather than sitting in the checking account if I don't have typical self-directed IRA investment assets presently to invest? This is a good question. You know, a lot of people will have their IRA LLC in place, and they may, you know, maybe they've just sold an investment, they've got a lot of money in the IRA LLC, and they don't have a current planned investment to make yet. They might be still looking for maybe another property or something. And meanwhile, their money's just sitting in a bank account earning, you know, less than 1%, certainly. So you can set up a brokerage account right out of the IRA LLC. And I do have some clients do that. Sometimes, you know, you got to be careful in explaining what you need with your broker-dealer who sets up the brokerage account for the LLC. But it is possible you can do it that way. Sometimes I'll have clients keep maybe $1,000 in the IRA LLC, and they'll roll back out, or excuse me, they'll return the, let's say you had $100,000 in the IRA LLC, and you'd complete an investment. Sometimes I'll have clients just say, well, I'm just going to leave $1,000 in the IRA LLC checking account. I'll send back $99,000 to my self-directed IRA, and then I'll roll the money from that self-directed IRA maybe to a TD Ameritrade account or something like that. That's the account that I do all my stock trading in. And when I find another alternative investment, I'm going to roll it back through the IRAs and back into the IRLC. So either way works, but you certainly are able to do just a brokerage account right out of the IRLC.
Okay. I like it.
There's some nuance to when you may do that, by the way. Some pros and cons, but those are the two options.
All right. Well, we've got just a few minutes left. I have a couple questions that are more related to the 1099s and real estate professional that were blog articles today. Do you have an IRA? Let's finish strong on an IRA comment or question, Matt. Do you have one that just came in?
You know, I just have, well, I have some on the self-directed 401k stuff that we already covered, so I'm good. We can talk more about that, but I'm good.
All right. Well, let me hit a couple of these other questions that just Larissa asked, I should say Laura, her email signature and email are different names here. So Larissa or Laura, thanks for your patience, asked about qualifying as a real estate professional. And the article that came out today in the newsletter goes through what those qualification rules are. And she just basically asked, can I count hours that I work as a realtor towards the hours necessary to qualify? Yes, you can use your hours as a realtor to be a real estate professional, not just the time managing your own properties. Both times qualify. So for any of you out there that are a contractor or a realtor and own rental property, any of your time doing any real estate at all will count towards your real estate professional status, if that's a good goal for you. And that's something I highlighted in that article. Be careful trying to just pursue real estate professional classification for the heck of it. Laura, I'll answer more of your questions here in your email offline. We had one other quick question from Quentin. He said, what's a 1099-C? I'm just going to say this in general, then Quentin, give you a more detailed email. A 1099-C is a cancellation of debt 1099. So if you had a property that went under, the bank may be sending you a 1099-C, just as the banks are required to send out 1099s, as you are required to send out 1099s to vendors. So if you walked away from some debt on a property and the bank got stuck holding the bag, you yourself might get a 1099-C. I talk about that in some other blog articles. I know Matt and I have held some radio shows on that. You'll want to look at the history there. Okay, so quickly, Matt, in our last couple minutes, tell people how they can get a copy of your book, and what's this promo code? How can we get $5 off? I want your book cheaper than Amazon.
All right, yeah, so it's on Amazon, you know, and it's on, you know, you can get it in Kindle ebook. But if you go to my site, sdirahandbook.com, and if you're searching around for the book, it's the Self-Directed IRA Handbook. But if you go to my site to buy it, you can buy it for $9.99 in Kindle, or it's $19.99 paperbacks, 260 pages. You can check out the table of contents. I also have a free Chapter 9 up. You can get a free downloadable copy right now on my site of Chapter 9. You just got to give us your email, sign up for our newsletter. But you're going to get even just more great information by doing that. But here's the promo code if you want $5 off to buy the paperback now. This is good through the end of February. It is RR644VGF. It's on my blog article announcing the book today.
Repeat that one more time, and I think it's in all caps, correct?
Correct. I don't know that it matters, but yeah, it's in all caps. RR644VGF.
And that's V as in Victor, G as in Gilbert, F as in Frank.
Yep.
Okay. Well, and I know that Lisa's typing that up right now at the studio on the chat line. And folks, it's in the newsletter, and it's in Matt's article on his blog, so you can get that. And I know he's only doing it for a limited time offer with Amazon and all of the other outlets. He can only do this for a short time. Matt, thanks so much for being with us. Everybody, thank you for another amazing opportunity to be here with you on the Mark Kohler Show. And we'll see you next week, Tuesday at 11 a.m. And keep living the dream. Thanks, Matt.
Thanks, Mark.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.